Greetings and welcome to today's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. I am Bill Grant, Chair of the Health and Medicine Member-Led Forum, and it is my pleasure to welcome the audience here and the listening audience. Now let me introduce our speaker for today, Dr. Steve Blake. Dr. Steve Blake has a Doctorate of Science, a Master's of Health, and an RH, a Doctor of Holistic Health. He's a Doctor of Holistic Health in Hawaii. He has a doctorate in holistic health, a doctorate in naturopathic medicine, a master's degree in herbology, and numerous massage certifications. He is a professional member of the American Herbalist Guild. He and his wife, Catherine, are co-founders of the College of World Health. He was the founder and director of the Maui Holistic Health Center. He was a speaker on the popular radio series, Natural Health Tips from Dr. Steve. He taught anatomy and physiology at the International Center for Natural Bioholistic Health and Medicine. He has also taught exercise physiology. He has developed many supplements, including Advanced Nutritional System and Children's Chewable and by Rainbow Light. He is well known for his databases on alternative remedies. The largest of these databases is over 125,000 footnotes. And now, Dr. Blake on figuring out fats.
Thank you, Dr. Grant, for the nice welcome, and thank you all for coming today. We have a healthcare crisis in America that's truly staggering. I didn't even write down the million new cases of cancer per year. 1.5 million heart attacks per year, and that's not including about 3 million heart attacks that are too small to be hospitalized, but it's just amazing what poor health Americans are in. Inflamed joints and arthritis is up to 60 million and counting, and diabetes is escalating very rapidly at 23 million Americans. If you add these numbers up, you don't get a lot of healthy Americans, and of course, obesity is at one of the roots of these causes. One of my favorite words in medicine is etiology. Etiology is the study of how things happen, why diseases occur. And I might mispronounce that to say etiology, because the more I study, the more I realize that food has a dramatic impact on our health and on our disease resistance. And today I have a talk for you that is going to be fast-paced and a little complicated, so stay tuned. But first we'll start out with some of the good fats. The best fats are found in whole foods, rather than in a bottle or in a liquid form or in a processed food. These are the natural fats found perhaps in avocados or olives, nuts and seeds, especially if they're raw, uncooked nuts and seeds. These are the best fats you can possibly get. And I'll be talking about essential fatty acids and vitamin E, both very important parameters of good fats versus bad fats. And you may have heard of flaxseed. There's also perilla seed with a very similar profile of fatty acids. And one of the important points about fats is that, okay, under lipids we have fats and oils. Lipids includes both. Fats are hard at room temperature and oils are liquid. The reason that oils are liquid is because they have polyunsaturated fats in them. And these polyunsaturated fats have such names as omega-3 and omega-6. And I'll be trying to demystify those names and make them a little more specific. I know you've all heard a lot about them. I'll mention something for the chefs in the crowd. It's not a good idea to heat oils that have essential fatty acids in them because it causes rancidity and oxygenation of the oils, and this is detrimental to health. So if you're going to be cooking at high heat, it's really best to cook with a very saturated oil like coconut oil, which is 92% saturated, or palm kernel oil, which is 82% saturated. These are both more saturated than even lard or suet, the beef tallow. For medium heat, you can use sesame oil, which somehow the Japanese knew back thousands of years ago that it has an antioxidant called sesamin that's heat activated and protects the oil as it's heated. For only very low heat purposes would you want to use olive oil. And remember, if you get any smoking of your oil, you're very much damaging it and you should cool it down. The Japanese have a nice system. They put a little water in their wok to cool the wok, and then they put the sesame oil in, And this prevents the oil from heating too much, and they put the vegetables in quick enough so that it all doesn't get to the smoke point. Now, in the old days, in far countries, many centuries ago, people would make oils very simply. They used little screw presses for palm oils throughout the tropics, or in Europe, they would have a wedge and a block of wood, put a few flax seeds in, and the cook would come along and whack it with a mallet occasionally, and a little bit of oil would drip out, very fresh, with all of the natural nutrients still in the oil. It's a fresh, unrefined oil, and they would make just as much as they need per day. Well, welcome to the 20th century. Things have changed. On screen, we have a giant screw press here that oil is now very cheap and very processed. And as we see countries get access to cheap oil, they eat too much. And cheap animal products, they eat too much. And this causes a lot of health problems, as I'll be talking about. You may have heard of cold pressing. In cold pressing, they don't heat the oils during the pressing. But as you'll see in the next slide, they heat them repeatedly after the pressing. So I'm going to give you a glimpse at what happens to a soybean, an innocent soybean growing in a field. First of all, in America, 80% of the soybeans are genetically modified so that they can take more of the Roundup glyphosate, or the pesticide Roundup. The active ingredient is glyphosate. They're not genetically modified for world hunger or for your health. They're genetically modified so they can spray more herbicide on them. Pesticide residues are fairly common with crops that are not organically produced. Organic soybeans, of course, would not have genetically modified genes, nor would they have pesticide residues. What they do with soybeans especially, and many of the other food seeds, is they grind them up and they mix them with a solvent. The reason for this is to make money. It's not about health. The solvents they use are hexane, carbon tetrachloride, gasoline, or benzene. What's common about these four chemicals is they are powerful cancer-causing agents. The chemicals are removed for economic reasons and reused, but residues remain. And residues of these carcinogens in our food is probably not a good idea. Perhaps that's contributing to the 1 million new cases of cancer per year. Now, they crush this at a high temperature, about 300 degrees Fahrenheit, and this causes rancidity, and the rancidity uses up the vitamin E and damages the delicate essential fatty acids. Now, during the processing, they remove the beta-carotene and beta-carotene is an oil-soluble vitamin that's very important, and it's the only form of vitamin A that is an antioxidant, can be converted in the body to all the other forms of vitamin A. So it would be very nice if they didn't take it out, along with the vitamin E, which is not removed entirely, but dramatically reduced. They like to leave a tiny amount of vitamin E just to preserve the oil, but they usually add BHT, butylated hydroxy toluene, instead. Lecithin's removed, and it's a very important nutrient. And it's rich in soybeans, for instance, and it contains phosphatidylcholine, very essential part of our a fatty acid structure of our cell membranes, really important. Now they bleach, deodorize, and heat this oil, and this is common to pretty much all oils that you see in a clear plastic bottle, up to almost 500 degrees Fahrenheit. This is very damaging to the oils. They pack them with preservatives into plastic bottles that may leach phthalates or methylene chloride into the oils. And what's interesting is that this bottle of oil on your shelf, when you reach for it, if you look at the ingredients, it doesn't mention any of this. It doesn't say this oil has been ruined, it's been stripped of its major nutrients. I'd like you to think of these processed oils very much like white flour. As white flour has been stripped of much of its minerals and vitamins, these oils have been stripped of many of the essential nutrients, and vitamin E probably the most important nutrient in there because it's such a powerful antioxidant. As a last step, if you wanted a hard oil, they would hydrogenate it, or partially hydrogenate it, as it's called on the label. And they do this in a pressure vessel at high temperatures with a cobalt catalyst, and they bubble hydrogen gas through it. And this causes the double bonds to fill up with hydrogen and makes it harder. And they used to use tropical oils because they're naturally harder, but now they found it's a lot cheaper to use whatever is the cheapest oil on the market and then hydrogenate it. And we've all heard of trans fats, and I'll be talking more about trans fats in a little while. So that's a little glimpse at how oils are processed. Now, a bit of easy biochemistry for you. This is a picture of a triglyceride. When you talk about fats in food or fats in the human body, about 95% of it is in the form of triglycerides. And these have a top that is made from blood sugar in the human body, or it's made from sugars in plants. And it has three legs. And each of the three legs can be any of the types of fatty acids. So one leg might be a saturated fatty acid. One might be a trans fatty acid. You could have an essential fatty acid there, or pretty much any of the fatty acids can lock on to this triglyceride here. We've heard a lot about saturated fatty acids, and we want to think about what is causing trouble. I have a section on cholesterol in the blood coming up, so I want to introduce you to the fatty acids. Now, we have over here lauric acid. This is lauric acid. You'll notice the fatty acids are all the same. The chains are either longer or shorter. Lauric acid has 12 carbons. Myristic acid has 14. And then palmitic, 16 carbons. And stearic acid, 18 carbons. Many of the fatty acids have 18 carbons. That's the most common length. And they vary from 4 to 24 carbons in length. But these are the common ones. Lauric acid does raise blood cholesterol. There's really no doubt about it. However, most Americans don't eat enough lauric acid because it's only found in palm oil, palm kernel oil, and coconuts. So people really don't eat enough to cause much trouble. Myristic acid also raises blood cholesterol. It's what's known as atherogenic, increases atherosclerosis in the body, clogs your arteries, basically. But myristic acid is found in small quantities in the average American diet, and small quantities in almost any food. Palmitic acid really seems to be the culprit as far as saturated fatty acids go. And this is something in my research that I wanted to outline for myself and for you, which saturated fats are causing trouble. And it seems to be palmitic acid is the one. Now, stearic acid is longer chain than the other three, and it has a higher melting point, but it does not increase blood cholesterol. And I was curious about this, so I found out why. And that's because in the body, we can change stearic acid into another 18-carbon fatty acid called oleic acid. And this has, our bodies can insert a single double bond, 9 carbons, right in the middle. And this changes it so it no longer raises our blood cholesterol. I thought that was rather interesting. One more slide showing you another picture of these acids. And it looks like, as I say, palmitic acid is the one. So where do we find palmitic acid in food? Practically speaking, where are you going to get it? So I made a little chart for you. Salmon and butter have 29% palmitic acid, ground beef 26, eggs 27. You'll notice that most animal products or livestock products, whether it be meat, chicken, fish, dairy products or eggs, all have about 30% palmitic acid. This excess of saturated fat is behind the millions of heart attacks and strokes that America is experiencing. If we could somehow reduce the amount of palmitic acid, then we would really help to solve this tremendously. And, of course, the only practical way to do this would be to eat less or even no animal products. Saturated fats right now are the most abundant fat in the American diet. I believe we get about three times as many saturated fats as polyunsaturated fats. And this is definitely part of the etiology of disease. Now, here's a picture of a monounsaturated fat. I think it's really neat that they bend in the middle. Wherever you get a double bond, and this is what a double bond looks like chemically, it's two carbons stuck together. And there's only two hydrogens here, and there's no hydrogens on the top. If they were going to hydrogenate this, they'd put a couple hydrogens on the top, and it'd be a single bond. Oleic acid is commonly turned into a trans fat by hydrogenation, where they do this, but they put hydrogens on opposite sides, and it warps it so that it's straight instead of bent. Oleic acid is found, of course, in olives. That's what it's named after. And it does not increase blood cholesterol. It's famous in the Mediterranean diet as being one of the oils that does not raise blood cholesterol. So here we have a lovely picture of a heart with the coronary arteries outlined, and these look pretty healthy. Why do we care about blood cholesterol? We care about it because it is the most important and reliable indicator of whether or not you are going to get a heart attack, or I am going to get a heart attack. If we look at blood cholesterol and nothing else, we can predict fairly accurately whether or not a person's going to get a heart attack. I'm going to talk today about total cholesterol. You also can measure LDL, low-density lipoprotein cholesterol, or HDL, high-density lipoprotein cholesterol. But for simplicity today, I'll talk mostly about total cholesterol because it's the most studied and it has perfect correlation with your heart attack risk. Now, most doctors will adhere to the idea that 200 milligrams per deciliter or above is high cholesterol and below is safe cholesterol, but I do thoroughly disagree. About 35% of heart attacks occur in this supposedly safe zone between 150 and 200, mostly clustered around 200 and not so much down 150. Now, have you all heard of the Framingham study? It's a very, very large study that's gone on for decades in Massachusetts. An interesting point here is that throughout all of these decades, they're watching people and they're watching their cholesterol and they're watching their heart attacks. How many heart attacks occurred in people with a cholesterol, total cholesterol of 150 or less? None. So if you can achieve a blood cholesterol of 150 or less through dietary means, then your chances of getting a heart attack are very, very slim. And this is borne out in many, many other studies too. If your cholesterol reduction is through statin drugs, it's much less certain that you will be reducing your risk of heart attacks because the process of the disease of atherosclerosis continues. Cholesterol, of course, is very useful in the body, and here I have some of the useful parts of it. Cortisone looks very much like cholesterol, and testosterone, the male sex hormone, also is made from cholesterol, and vitamin D is also made from cholesterol. All of these substances are crucial in the body. We do need cholesterol, but do we need cholesterol in the diet? No, we don't. Humans are quite capable of making cholesterol in the body. We used to think it was made in the liver. Now we know that less than half is made in the liver. And every cell in our body can and does make cholesterol. The hormone-producing cells make more cholesterol. But all cells can make a little bit to stiffen their cell membrane should they need a little extra. So cholesterol is not necessarily a bad thing, but it's a bad thing if you get too much. So how do you raise your blood cholesterol? Let's say you really wanted a heart attack. How would you do it? Excess saturated fats, the quickest way. And that's real easy to do. What kind of foods would you eat to get excessive saturated fats? Animal products. All types of livestock products have excessive saturated fat. All types of animal products. Now, I've tried to quantify these four categories here and say how much. From what I can see in the research, it seems like about 75% of your risk of high cholesterol, high blood cholesterol, comes from saturated fat excesses in the diet, or directly from animal products, to state it more simply. Excess sugar and white flour also contribute to excess blood cholesterol, only if they're in excess. Because these are rapidly absorbed, your bloodstream becomes clogged with too much glucose, and the glucose is broken down into two carbon fragments and built back up into cholesterol by the body. That's one of the ways we have. It's also made, of course, into triglycerides and stored in fat tissue. Now, we've all heard that stress increases blood cholesterol, right? This is very, very commonly known. They have meditation programs in hospitals to try and lower blood cholesterol. And I wanted to know why. Does anyone know why stress would increase blood cholesterol? What's the mechanism? Well, here's how it works. Our adrenal glands sit over our kidneys, and they produce stress hormones like cortisol. Cortisol is made from cholesterol. We get under a lot of stress. Our liver very wisely says, we're under a lot of stress. We're going to need to produce more cortisol. So let's dump cholesterol into the bloodstream so our adrenal glands can make all the stress hormones they want. This is good for a survival strategy, but if you're under stress day after day, this will raise your blood cholesterol too. It seems, though, that it's probably limited to maybe 10 or 20% of the raising of blood cholesterol. It's not that significant a factor compared with diet. One more factor. Now, many years ago, we thought that if you ate cholesterol in food, which is, of course, only found in animal products, that that would raise your blood cholesterol. Well, nowadays we realize that, for instance, if you eat a three-ounce steak, you get 7 grams of saturated fat, but only 0.07 grams of cholesterol. So about 1% as much cholesterol as saturated fat. So the saturated fat is very much more powerful in producing more cholesterol. But I think that even so, dietary cholesterol can be a bad thing. There's something called oxysterols, and these oxysterols are oxidized cholesterol. Now, it's really only the oxidized LDL and cholesterol that is going to damage your arteries and continue the process of atherosclerosis. I say continue because nowadays doctors are evaluating children at age 2, toddlers, for high cholesterol and starting medication at age 8. By age 20, practically every person on a standard American diet will have extensive arterial damage and the start of clogged arteries and atherosclerosis. This has been shown by a lot of autopsies on soldiers, both in Korea and Vietnam. And it's quite clear now that we have angiograms, we can actually look at the arteries and see what's going on. So, well, I hope now you know how to get a heart attack should you desire one, or avoid one, which is my goal. Speaking of avoiding one, these four doctors, Dr. Esselstyn, Dr. Ornish, Dr. Terry Shintani, and Dr. McDougall, have all been reversing heart disease using diet. Some, like Dean Ornish, use diet along with meditation and exercise. But I find it very interesting that Dr. Esselstyn, who is a cardiologist, uses only diet. And at one point, he has a book, Preventing and Reversing Heart Disease. It's very good. And this picture is in the book and in his research. He had another cardiologist come to him, and his arteries looked like A there on the left, very constricted and very difficult for blood to flow through the coronary arteries. And, of course, that's how you get a heart attack, if blood isn't flowing through the coronary arteries. He was in such bad shape that even a stent was very difficult to be put in. And so he went to his friend and fellow cardiologist, Dr. Esselstyn, and said, "What can you do? I'm going to die." And he said, "Well, change your diet." Well, within a matter of months, he had his cholesterol, using diet only, down below 150. And within 3 years, you can see how his angiogram changed on B there. His coronary arteries are now looking full flow and no longer a problem. So I think it's very exciting that we can take an artery that looks like this and change like this and change it to look like that. And we also, by the way, can take an artery that looks like this and change it to look like that. My point being that you can adjust your diet, your blood cholesterol up or down with your diet. You can adjust it to whatever level you want. You can probably get it down to 100 if you go on a really radical low-fat diet, and it doesn't take that long, a few months probably. If you can get it down to 150 through diet, then your chances of a heart attack or a stroke will be just vastly reduced. Now, here's some pictures of, we've all heard about LDL, low-density lipoprotein, and then there's VLDL, which is larger and a precursor to the LDL. Chylomicrons are dietary, and if you ate a big fatty steak, your body would absorb the fat. Some of the fat and some of the cholesterol would be absorbed through the intestines intact and go into chylomicrons. These chylomicrons would then go through your lymphatic ducts and be put directly into your bloodstream, where those oxysterols could really damage your blood system. Now, the rest of your dietary fats go through a portal system, which takes all of the nutrients from your digestive organs and channels them directly to the liver so they can be processed. In the liver is made the very low-density lipoproteins and the low-density lipoproteins. And in the liver, if natural vitamin E in the form of alpha-tocopherol is available, it's packaged with these LDL packages. And their lipoproteins, lipo means fat, and proteins are the shell that allow the fatty substances to move through the bloodstream. Otherwise, they can't move through the bloodstream. So they package it with vitamin E, and this prevents arterial damage and it prevents atherosclerosis. Now, unfortunately, synthetic vitamin E really doesn't work well at all. It's more damaging than helpful. And the vast majority of supplements and the vast majority of supplements used by doctors who are studying the effects of vitamin E on heart disease are synthetic. It's called all racemic, and it is composed of 8 isomers of vitamin E, 4 of which surely do nothing. And if any of those 4 get put on an LDL and circulated, they're completely unprotected, which means they're very likely going to oxidize and damage your arteries. I have another picture here that shows the amounts of the different things. The triglycerides are the purple here, and in chylomicrons, it's mostly triglycerides. Very low density lipoproteins, it's mostly triglycerides with a little green cholesterol there. LDL has a lot of cholesterol left because the triglycerides have been pulled out by muscles to make energy, by fat cells for storage, and so they've been cleaned. The HDL, of course, returns unused cholesterol back to the liver for disposal through the bile. So I thought I'd give you a look at these things that you've heard so much about. I wondered, okay, we now know that animal products have palmitic acid, and we know that palmitic acid creates high blood cholesterol. How does the saturated fat do it? How does it make the cholesterol high? So this is a fairly new slide. I've been able to figure out some of the pieces of the puzzle. The LDL, the VLDL, is made in the liver, and less is made with polyunsaturated fats than with the saturated fats from animal products. Also, the persistence of the VLDL is reduced with the polyunsaturated fats, but with saturated fats, it stays in the bloodstream longer. Also, the LDL stays in the bloodstream longer. And this is because there are receptors in our fat cells and in our liver cells that take the LDL out. They take the cholesterol out of the LDL. But there are fewer receptors when you eat more saturated fats. So this is the mechanism that is why saturated fats create high blood cholesterol. They also, the saturated fats, reduce the amount of cholesterol removed in the bile. This is another important way that they increase the cholesterol in our bloodstream. So I just wanted to say that, and on the bottom there is kind of an important quote. If you reduce saturated fat by 5%, you get a 43% reduction in heart disease. This could be 645,000 less heart attacks per year in America. And while we're wasting trillions on saving people after their heart attacks, how about changing the causes of heart attacks instead? I have not yet seen a health program that really focuses enough on prevention. And in order to focus on prevention, we need 2 things. One is to make people aware of their own personal choices and how that impacts their health. And 2, much more difficult, or is it, have the food companies provide us with food that's not so damaging. Both are very difficult. So here's a picture of my wife holding up an avocado from our avocado orchard in Maui. It's a nice big one. And I'll talk about essential fatty acids. There are only 2 essential fatty acids. This one I'm going to call today alpha-linolenic acid. It is an omega-3, and it is the root of the family of omega-3s. This is the, it has 3 points of unsaturation. The reason it's called an omega-3 is because the double bond's after 1, 2, 3, after the 3rd carbon. Omega-6s don't have this double bond. Their first double bond's after the 6th carbon. And omega-9s, like oleic acid, well, then it's after the 9th carbon. This one's hard to get. This essential fatty acid, alpha-linolenic acid, is difficult to get, and it's very fragile. It's fragile because of the 3 double bonds. These are places where oxygen can damage it, and heat and light can damage it. It's found really over 1% in only just a handful of places. Walnuts, canola oil, flaxseed oil, and you may not have heard of perilla seed oil, but it has a composition very much like flaxseed oil. As you'll see, I have the ratios here. 4 to 1 in favor of alpha-linolenic acid is very unusual among anything. It's very hard to find. Americans get too much of the other one, linoleic acid, the other essential fatty acid. So sometimes it's helpful to take flaxseed oil to help reverse this overabundance of the other one. The other essential fatty acid is linoleic acid. Now, there are only two essential fatty acids. Saturated fats are not essential. We don't need to eat them in the diet. We can make them in our bodies, and they don't have many good uses in the body anyway. They're burned for energy, basically, and they stiffen cell membranes a little bit. But as I say, we can make all we want. The omega-3s in fish oils are not essential fatty acids, and we don't need them for health. But these two we really do need for health, and these are the two. You'll see it has 2 points of unsaturation, starting at the sixth carbon, and each place where it's unsaturated has a bend. And I think that's kind of neat, the way they bend there. I'm going to talk more about these. Basically, where do you get linoleic acid? It's very easy. Any vegetable oil, and vegetable oil's all over the place, and generally people get too much rather than too little of this essential fatty acid. Now, phospholipids are, as it said, they have great importance in the cell walls, all of our cell walls, including the immune cells, like T cells. They also have phospholipids in them, and these phospholipids have two legs instead of three, like a triglyceride. The two legs can each hold a fatty acid. With phospholipids, the fatty acids are generally longer chain, essential fatty acids that have been processed longer chain, and I'll be talking more about their significance. Here's another picture of phosphatidylcholine, one of the four phospholipids, and it has a backbone, and you notice one of the legs is bent, and it's bent in the middle, so you know it's oleic acid because it's bent at the ninth carbon out of 18. Because that leg is bent, this phospholipid will not pack together in the cell membrane tightly. If both legs were saturated fatty acids, they would pack together very tightly, and this reduces permeability of the cell membrane, and this is very important for diabetes because you need to get your, and it's also very important for getting LDL out of the bloodstream, and it's important for getting glucose out of the bloodstream. You need to have not just saturated fats, and trans fats are also straight, and they also pack together too much. So for proper cell permeability, you need essential fatty acids, and it's just what Americans get too little of. So what happens if you get, now we all know that diabetes is basically a sugar disease. People eat too many sugars and rapidly metabolizing carbohydrates, and too much glucose in their blood causes trouble, and not enough assimilation into the cell. But saturated fats also reduce assimilation into the cell of insulin, and they block it really in many ways. Both sat fats and trans fats do this. So it might be wise to lower your saturated fat intake by lowering your animal product intake. It might be wise to lower your trans fat intake, and I'll tell you the sources of those a few slides down. Now, I'm going to talk about eicosanoids. How many people have heard of eicosanoids here? Okay, not too many people. That's really a shame because they're really, really interesting things. They're tissue hormones, very powerful. They act locally and just for a short time. Eicosanoids are all made by an oxygenation process from these three sources. You could call them precursors. One is EPA, and its long name is eicosapentaenoic acid. It sounds pretty intimidating until you realize that eicosa means 20 and penta means 5. So it's a 20-carbon chain with 5 double bonds. And that simplifies it for you a little, I hope. You can think of it that way. This is an omega-3, and it's made in the body from alpha-linolenic acid. Arachidonic acid is made from omega-6s, and DGLA is also made from omega-6s, but it acts a lot more like an omega-3. Balance is what's important with eicosanoids. We want to balance the amount of EPA and arachidonic acid, and this is crucial for many, many areas of health. Autoimmune diseases and inflammatory diseases like arthritis are especially susceptible to too much linoleic acid, linoleic acid as opposed to alpha-linolenic acid. Americans get 10 to 15 times as much linoleic acid, and this overbalancing is not a good idea. The correct ratio would be maybe 4 to 1. And the reason why we need a little more linoleic acid is because the desaturase enzyme prefers alpha-linolenic acid wisely. But when we get that much, it just completely overburdens it. We get too little EPA and too much arachidonic acid, and this is a problem. So how can we balance it? Well, one way is to eat less of the processed oils. Oils in bottles, including salad dressings, should be used conservatively rather than liberally. And when you eat processed foods, you might want to check the label and see just how much oil is in there. And try and keep your oil consumption down. Get most of your oils, if you can, from nuts and seeds, avocados, olives, and whole foods. These oils are better in so many ways. And they also have a much nicer balance of the two eicosanoid precursors. These eicosanoids act just for a short amount of time, but they're very, very powerful. And we can make these 20-carbon precursors in our own bodies, but we need adequate levels of zinc, vitamin B6, and vitamin C. Smoking interferes with this lengthening of the chain and the desaturation enzymes. Diabetes interferes with it. Corticosteroids interfere with it. My goal would be to have all of you make your own EPA and your own arachidonic acid in perfect balance and not have to take any external EPA because, well, first I want to explain, here are the three types of eicosanoids that are made, and they're made in an oxidation process with either cyclooxygenase or lipoxygenase. Does it help if I use big words? Thromboxanes are made from thrombocytes, and thrombocytes are the clotting factors in blood. So clotting of blood is extremely important with heart disease. It is blood clots that kill people with heart attacks. It is blood clots that damage brains and make wonderful people into vegetables. So clotting is extremely important, and it's controlled on a very close level with thromboxanes, which are made from these, which are the eicosanoids made from those three precursors. Leukotrienes are white blood cell factors, and they influence our immune system. The ones made from omega-6 and arachidonic acid activate the immune system very powerfully. Let's say you hit yourself with a hammer on one finger. In that one finger, the arachidonic acid would be converted into the eicosanoids. Those eicosanoids would activate your immune system in that one finger at that moment. They would shut off the blood vessels by clotting because you don't want you to bleed too much. They would activate all of your various immune system cells so they could go in there and protect you from infection. And this is a temporary phenomenon, and it occurs just in the one place. Whereas if you get too much arachidonic acid, it influences your entire body. So all of your immune cells go a little bit too ballistic, and you may get autoimmune problems, and you may get your body attacking itself. So this is one reason why also arachidonic acid is found only in meat products, and this is another way that your system is unbalanced by eating those. Prostaglandins, I think we've all heard of, and prostaglandins influence the same things, inflammation, pain, and many, many other things. They're very powerful. Now I've got a little diagram here, and basically what I want you to get from this diagram is that vegetable oils, the omega-6 family, linoleic acid, lead to arachidonic acid production. And this increases inflammation, constricts arteries, and more blood clotting. On the contrary, flax seeds and other things like walnuts that have more of the alpha-linolenic acid, they, through enzymatic change, are turned into eicosapentaenoic acid, the EPA that's famed for fish oil. And then these, they work the other way. Now, in my example of you hurting your finger, it would inflame and clot. But then after a period of time, the omega-3s would come in from EPA and make eicosanoids that would relieve the inflammation, quiet down the immune system, remove the clotting. So they work together. We need both, and we need both in balance. Now, I'm going to very kindly show you only a brief glimpse of this much more complicated diagram, since we don't really have time to go into it today. This shows the ways things are made. If you're healthy and you get a lot of nutrients, you don't need to take fish oil EPA. Now, EPA, eicosapentaenoic acid, is made by algae, and fish can eat the algae, and really only three common fishes have any appreciable amounts of EPA. That's salmon, mackerel, and sardines, the oily fishes. They don't make it themselves. They get it from algae. If they're farmed salmon, they may not get much algae. They may not have much EPA. So this is a problem along with all of the contaminants that are often introduced. PCBs are a common contaminant in fish farms. There are many, many others. When you take either fish oil capsules or you eat a normal serving of salmon, sardines, or mackerel, you're going to get a boost of EPA in your diet that is going to alter the balance in your cells, especially your cell walls, and very interestingly, your immune system cell walls, like macrophages, are going to have more EPA than arachidonic acid. So when your body makes eicosanoids, it's going to make more of the eicosanoids that reduce the effect of the immune system. This science is very clear. If you take fish oil capsules or you eat much in the way of salmon, sardines, or mackerel, your immune system will be suppressed. And this will increase your susceptibility not only to infections, but to cancer. Because it has been shown quite clearly that our cells in our body that protect us from cancer, that go around and kill the cancer cells, also have cell membranes that are susceptible to having too much EPA, which basically inactivates the immune system to a certain extent. Also, I want to make the point that when you take EPA, your entire body has the suppression of the inflammation. In my example, when your body makes EPA, it only made it in that one damaged finger to suppress the inflammation when it was no longer needed. So this is a very drug-like effect, and in fact, non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs and COX-2 inhibitors work the same way. They suppress eicosanoids, and they suppress all eicosanoids all throughout the body. COX-2 are a little more specific. Of course, they have their problems, too. I did want to mention with EPA that bleeding tendencies are accelerated with the introduction of the fatty fishes or the EPA into the body. And this is a concern before surgery or for people who might have a problem with bleeding. It's quite clear that the blood does become thinner when you take EPA. And although it's been suggested that people with very sludgy, cholesterol-rich blood take EPA to thin it down, as we've seen, it can be done with diet, which actually reverses the atherosclerosis, and I think this is a much wiser course. Now, DHA is known as docosahexaenoic acid. Docosa means 22, hex means 6. So it's a 22-carbon fatty acid. It's not an essential fatty acid, but it's made from essential fatty acids in the body. In fact, it's made from EPA, one desaturation and one elongation, and you've got DHA in your body. And it's essential for the brain and the retinas, and really a very important part of our bodies. Should you take external DHA, we're not really sure what the side effects of taking DHA are. There are things known as docosanoids, and they're as yet lightly studied. And these docosanoids are similar to eicosanoids in that they have powerful local effects in the brain and the retinas in very important areas. How wise is it to take a glut of DHA when we don't really know what's going to happen? I take the cautious approach from health, and I would rather that you became so healthy and well-nourished that you could make your own long-chain essential fatty acids rather than relying on external ones. And I did make the point that arachidonic acid is found only in meat products, and so if you don't eat meat products, your arachidonic acid balance with EPA will be better. Okay, a few words about trans fats. Trans fats are, well, they're from a couple of sources. 40% of them are from what you see on the screen, cakes, cookies, all kinds of goodies. And they're made firmer by the introduction of hydrogenated oils, which contain as a byproduct trans fatty acids. I think it's very interesting that 21% of America's trans fatty acids come from certain animal products, basically beef and dairy products. And these trans fatty acids are made in the rumen of the cow by bacteria. In fact, the dairy industry often introduces formaldehyde into cow stomachs routinely to kill the bacteria that create the trans fatty acids, especially conjugated linoleic acid. Trans fatty acids are usually essential fatty acids that have been perverted and changed. Here's a picture of oleic acid on the right, and here's trans oleic. It looks very much like stearic acid, another 18-carbon. It's been made straight. So in the cell membranes, it packs together really tightly. What's bad about trans fats? Well, unlike saturated fats or polyunsaturated fats, the trans fats seem to actually decrease your HDL. And the HDL is needed to scavenge extra cholesterol. So that's a bad thing. They compete with the essential fatty acids in cell membranes. Most of them are perverted essential fatty acids. So if your body's trying to make some eicosanoids, it's going to have a problem when it works with a trans fatty acid, because it's going to have a lot of trouble with the desaturase enzymes trying to desaturate something that where the double bond is skewed sideways. And you can see the two drawings there. The trans fatty acid looks more like a lightning bolt, and the cyst looks more like a horseshoe. So I want to talk a little bit about where you get your fat. Now that I've introduced what fats are and where they are, here's some likely sources here. In Hawaii, we prefer the macadamia nut chocolates. One of my points is, are your fats protected with antioxidants? If they aren't, your chances of heart disease and strokes and cancer are going to grow up dramatically. So meat, fish, and dairy products contain very low amounts of vitamin E. Vitamin E is the principal and most powerful fat-soluble antioxidant. If they're unprotected, they can damage not only the arteries, and do routinely damage the arteries, but they can damage DNA and cause cancer. This is a little chart from the Diet Doctor, which is a program I make for, it's a software I actually sell, so that you can analyze your own diet and find out, for instance, what percentage of fat, of your calories are fat, which is always fun to look at, sometimes not so fun. Over the word animal here, I have hamburger, poultry, and cheese. You notice the amount of vitamin E is very, very low in these three animal products. Now, on the left, I have nuts and seeds here, and the I think it's interesting that cashews are so low in vitamin E. This is because they have a shell and a husk. Coconuts are also very low in vitamin E because they're naturally protected from oxidation by the physical means. Here we have almonds, very high, sesame seeds and sunflower seeds, extremely high and highly recommended as a source of your fats in your diet. You couldn't do any better than to use sesame seeds and sunflower seeds to get fats. My wife will make salad dressings by throwing these nuts and seeds into the blender and then making a tasty salad dressing with fresh. And fresh means that the vitamin E isn't used up, the oils aren't rancid, and you're getting the essential fatty acids before they've had a chance to damage. Now on the right here, I have vegetable oils, and this tall bar here is canola oil, which has a fascinating history. Kind of a confusing oil since it's mutagenically produced, but yet has a lot of alpha-linolenic acid, which we need, and a lot of vitamin E, which we need. If there are any bad effects, I don't know about them yet. I did analyze eight diets for another lecture, and I just wanted to briefly say that the diets that are very rich in meat at the top have very little vitamin E. So you're coupled with getting tons of fat with very little protection. Whereas in the bottom, we have the raw vegan diet has really the most vitamin E because they're eating a lot of nuts and seeds. A normal vegan whole food diet has a decent amount. The RDA is 15 milligrams, and we're looking at 22 for a vegan whole food diet or 45 for a raw diet. The Ornish diet or the other 7 to 10% fat diets are too low in fat to get the fat-soluble vitamins like vitamin E. So this is the downside of getting so little. And I think that many people are now eating a few nuts and seeds on those diets if they can. Essential fatty acids are another way that I want you to think about how to rate your fats. Unfortunately, meat, fish, and dairy products, and poultry, of course, they have almost no essential fatty acids, extremely small amounts. French fries, well, they don't have much left. Green vegetables have wonderful essential fatty acids, but so little that it would take you 4 gallons of cooked spinach in order to get the amount of alpha-linolenic acid that you need in a day. Not too practical, unless you're a horse. Fruit, of course, has very little in the way of essential fatty acids except for olives and avocados. Nuts and seeds are your best sources of both vitamin E and essential fatty acids. Now, how much fat should you eat? Well, the American Heart Association says you should try and get it from the average of 35 to 45% of calories down to 30% of calories. I think that the only reason they're saying that is because they don't expect Americans to be able to eat less fat. And it's true that if you're eating animal products, you probably will get more fat than that. So that would entail having to not eat animal products, which many people don't want to do for reasons I find mysterious. We need about 15% of our calories from fat in order to keep up weight and energy. And I think that perhaps the perfect ideal amount might be 20 to 25%, unless they were all coming from a source that was really good. Now, there's three very interesting charts. The middle one is fat intake from the largest epidemiological study ever done in China, collaboration with Cornell and the Chinese universities. Very elaborate study. You see, in some areas, there's a lot of fat intake. And some areas, there's a lot of animal protein intake. Now, you notice any similarities between these two charts? The more animal products you eat, the more fat you eat. And the more fat you eat, the more cancer you get. Now, the correlation is very accurate. This is all cancers, neoplastic, malignant cancers. The correlation with breast cancer and prostate cancer is extremely high. The more fat you eat, the more animal fat you eat, the more your chances of breast cancer and prostate cancer are. And colon cancer is the same. Very, very high. The more fat you eat. It's pretty easy to know how much fat you're getting. You know, vegetables have very little. Animal products and nuts and seeds have very much. Beans are a very nice moderate source of fats, and I think that Americans could, we just came from Mexico, and Americans could eat some more beans. Good for you, especially green beans. They're wonderful. Fats in diets, just briefly I wanted to say that, for instance, down here on this raw vegan diet, they get 45% of their calories from fat. Now, that's really too much. But on the other hand, look at how little saturated fat they're getting. So they're almost all polyunsaturated fats and almost all from nuts and seeds, so they're very, very defended by vitamin E. So perhaps a very active person could eat that much from those sources. However, up at the top, we have the Atkins diet, where he's getting 65% of his calories from fat, and the saturated fats are very high. And this means that they're getting unprotected fats. And this is very, very damaging. I would call this diet somewhat suicidal. I do want to mention that vegetarian diets are not always helpful. This transition vegetarian diet, there's a lot of white flour, cheese, and eggs. And so the sat fats are high. The total fats are high. And so it's not necessarily a really, really great idea. Now, this is the last slide, and kind of want to summarize the talk today. For Americans who don't want to get heart attacks, cancer, arthritis, and all the other scourges, even diabetes, want to lower their risk, the best fats and oils are found in whole foods, especially nuts, seeds, olives, and avocados. Animal fats are just not healthy. The fats in animals lead to problems. I hope I've described that well today. If you want essential fatty acids, you're really going to need to go with some nuts and seeds in your diet. The raw nuts and seeds are better for a couple reasons. One is that you don't tend to overdo it. If they're roasted and salted, you tend to eat too many nuts and seeds. And the other is, of course, their vitamin E is protected and their essential fatty acids. And I hope that I have perhaps described a little bit to you today about omega-3 fatty acids, what they are, what they aren't, and how healthful they may be or may not be. And, of course, we all knew trans fats were bad, and I just reiterated that. And I want to thank you very much for your patience and attention, and thank you, Bill.
Well, thank you, Steve. Now we
thank you.
Have time for questions. I'll pass the microphone around the audience.
I'm a little confused about salmon. How much should one incorporate in a week or not?
Well, the question is about how much salmon you should eat. Well, if you ate the usual 3-ounce serving, you would get enough EPA to thin your blood and lower your general immunity so that you would lower your ability to identify and destroy cancer cells and identify and destroy pathogens, infections, viral and bacterial infections. So the proper amount of salmon, especially considering the contamination that's likely in salmon, both wild and especially farm salmon, with PCBs and many other contaminants. Probably the most healthful amount would be zero. The tastiest amount would be more.
My question is, what are you getting when you're eating non-fat yogurt? And another question that is completely off the topic, except it's kind of related, and we live here in wine country, is how does alcohol factor in to all or any of this?
Okay, let's see.
Well,
non-fat yogurt really doesn't have any fat in it, so I can't comment on the fats in it because there aren't any. And as far as wine, there have been some associations with red wine lowering your risk of heart disease. The effect is very small. And, of course, you know, there is this little problem with addiction with alcohol that we have to maintain vigilance over. So if you're one of those rare people who can really just have a very small amount, and, of course, it would be nice if it didn't have sulfites in it and it was organically grown so it didn't have a lot of pesticide sprayed right on the grapes, then perhaps that wouldn't be such a bad idea. I think a little relaxation is good. I would recommend that instead of a glass of red wine, you get a workout. You'll feel even better after the workout, and all of the effects are positive, including the stress-relieving effects.
About the cholesterol, when it was 150 to 200, is that the total including LDL and HDL? My LDL in my last test was 120, but the HDL was 83 or 4. So one doctor said, oh, we definitely need to lower your LDL to at least 100. But another holistic doctor said, you're fine because the HDL is high. What's your opinion?
Well, do you know what your total cholesterol?
I was told to take red yeast rice tablets.
Yes. Well, it sounds to me like, is it possible that you may be eating too many saturated fats and not enough nuts and seeds?
The last year or so, I've been eating more, mostly almonds, sometimes some other seeds. But as I told you, I've often have like a scoop of ice cream a number of times a week, and some very dark chocolate, which of course has fat in it every day.
I wouldn't worry about dark chocolate. It shouldn't be a problem. The fats in chocolate is usually cocoa butter, and the small amounts that you eat are not likely to cause any big problems. But I think that you answered your own question about the scoops of ice cream, and I told you about an ice cream that I thought is non-dairy, and it is still rather fatty and sugary, though, so you're going to have to make up your mind on that one. It really depends on other factors, and what I would like to say is that if you could increase your vegetable and fruit intake and your nut and seed intake and lower your animal product intake, which sounds just like ice cream, that your LDL and your total cholesterol will both go down to levels you want. You can dial your cholesterol up and down with your diet, so go ahead. Lower your ice cream until you get to the target level that you want to achieve, and then if your ice cream goes up higher, the only way to really tell is with my wife's holding up a diet doctor. If you analyze your diet, which is very simple to do now with a computer, and I wrote this program based on the USDA food composition database, you can analyze your diet and find out which foods are supplying excess saturated fats, and then it may be more than just the ice cream. So you may need to identify other areas that you could reduce, and maybe you could keep your ice cream. If you can reduce your total cholesterol to 150, you would be considered by many experts as heart attack proof, if you can do it without drugs. Okay, another question? Let me put it this way. If you were to stop eating fish, it wouldn't cause any health hazard that I know of. There are different fish out there. Certainly, the mackerel and the sardines are less polluted than the salmon, which are larger fish, live longer, and accrue more of the toxins into them. In either case, you'll be getting probably enough EPA to unbalance your immune system. And I know that many experts have told people to eat fish on a regular basis and even to take fish oil capsules. And one of the purposes of my talk tonight was to educate you on how in your own body, by keeping your zinc, vitamin C, B6 levels up, by not smoking cigarettes and, if possible, avoiding corticosteroids, that you can make your own EPA in your own body without requiring fish. And this is a much better solution, both for immune system and for bleeding, and because these eicosanoids are local, acting, and temporary, whereas the fish will increase EPA throughout your entire body. And this is not ever desirable, especially, by the way, for elderly people are counseled not to eat salmon or mackerel, sardines, or to take fish oil capsules, because elderly people often die of infections, and the lowering of their immune system in this case could be life-threatening. Yes. Well, what I'm suggesting is that you go to the root of the omega-3 family, alpha-linolenic acid, for instance, by taking flax seeds, putting them in a nut grinder or a little coffee grinder, and grinding them up daily and putting them in your food, in your salad dressing, or somehow incorporating them without cooking them into your food. This would have a similar effect on inflammation, but this would allow your body to reduce inflammation locally, say just in the knuckles that are bothering you, rather than everywhere in your body. And inflammation, remember, is a facet of our immune system. It means it's working. And your immune system is working, perhaps over time. By the way, to alter that balance in your own body, I was talking today about changing the balance of linoleic acid and alpha-linolenic acid. So if you could lower the amount of vegetable oils in your diet, that would be very helpful as well. So this is the best way to do it, if you possibly can. If you need to take fish oil, consider it like a drug, because it acts like a drug. It has side effects, and it influences your entire body instead of using your body's own wisdom to affect certain places and not others. Well, I can't get too much into calcium today, but I will say that as I analyze diets with the diet doctor, I find that calcium is often low in diets. And I will mention in my book, Vitamins and Minerals Demystified, which is published by McGraw-Hill last year, I carefully go over depletion of calcium in the body from excess protein, which you can really only get by eating animal products, or a lot of soy, and also excess salt, which has a profound influence on draining our bones. So if you can address those two, that will help your calcium intake. And, of course, you should analyze your diet to see how much you're really getting in your diet. It's the best way. Thank you.
Okay, our thanks to Dr. Steve Blake for his comments here today. We also thank our audiences here as well as those listening to the recording. And now this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, commemorating its 106th year of enlightened discussion, is adjourned.